This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 22nd October 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 21st of October 2021, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Council U-turn on cuts to services, MP's security, and mystery of abandoned pups. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Council U-turn on cuts to services. Hampshire County Council has dropped plans to slash its public health budget. The controversial move would have led to cuts in services such as health visiting and school nursing. During a public consultation earlier this year, critics pointed out that it would be a false economy and increase burdens on other parts of the NHS. In a statement, the Institute of Health Visiting said, "We are beyond delighted to announce that Hampshire County Council has reconsidered its position to cut £2.09 million from its public health budget." In partnership, the Institute of Health Visiting and the School and Public Health Nursing Association came together as a united voice and worked with practitioners and across our stakeholder networks to galvanise support to challenge these cuts. With some 3,000 responses from national organisations and individuals, two national petitions to stop the cuts, numerous blogs and a vocal social media challenge, the strength of feeling against these cuts was plain to see. We do not underestimate the difficult decisions facing councils across the country and want to thank Hampshire County Council for their openness about these challenges, which really struck a chord nationally. This was never just a Hampshire issue or a criticism of their proposals as an isolated case. Rather, if their dangerous suggested remodelling of services had gone ahead, then this would have potentially paved the way for other cash-strapped councils to follow suit. We also recognise that councils are being forced to make some very difficult decisions. Robbing Peter to pay Paul is not the answer. One Hampshire health visitor said, "If these cuts had gone ahead, it would have devastated the service and really been the end of health visiting. It is a surprise. Everyone assumed it was a done deal. The council is still proposing to make savings." Substance misuse services, £60,000, by continuing to provide an open access substance misuse service in Winchester from a more cost-effective venue. Stop smoking services, £168,000, by stopping unsupported prescribing, reducing the number of prescriptions written by GPs for stop smoking medication and nicotine replacement therapy that are not accompanied by a support referral to Smoke Free Hampshire. Evidence shows that the combination of both leads to better long-term outcomes. Sexual health services, £8,000, by removing a duplicated HIV and syphilis self-sampling service. Councillor Liz Fairhurst said, "I would like to thank everyone who took part in the consultation. Their views, along with feedback from Public Health England, PHE, on use of public health ring-fenced grants, means that the proposals originally shared with the public have been substantially altered, including not pursuing public health school nursing proposals. The scrutiny committee will now review the proposals in detail, then pass them to me with any additional changes they may wish to recommend for a final decision in November. It was anticipated that the County Council's public health function would need to contribute 6.8 million of savings in 2021-22 towards the local authority's overall budget shortfall. Just over 3 million of savings have already been achieved through internal and external service transformation.
MPs' security. Winchester MP Steve Brine has declined to publicly discuss his and his staff's security following the murder of MP Sir David Amos. Sir David, 69, was stabbed to death at a surgery for constituents in Leon C, Essex last Friday. Mr. Brine told the Chronicle, "On surgeries and the whole security operation I run, I just can't get into it and am advised not to." Speaking on talk radio about the killing, he said, "We are not in the slightly bit surprised because it has happened before, and I fear it will happen again because nothing has really changed with our security when outside the Palace of Westminster. In the palace, we're surrounded by people with semi-automatic machine guns. That's not where the concern lies. It is when we are outside, that is where there is concern." Asked if he thought, "Could that have been me?" Mr. Brine said, "Of course. I wouldn't go into it in the media, but the concerns are nothing new to me. I have lived with it for many years."
Mystery of abandoned pups. 8 Labrador puppies abandoned on the South Downs Way near Winchester are poised to be rehomed in the coming days. 7 of the puppies were rescued by cyclist Rob Carter on the South Downs Way close to the junction with Rodfield Lane last Wednesday. The 8th was found alone near Alsford Golf Club, 3 miles away on Sunday. How and why the young canines got to the isolated spot near Cheesefoot Head is unclear. The puppies, around 3 months old, were taken to and are being cared for at Three Oaks Boarding Kennels near Bishop's Waltham on behalf of Winchester City Council. They were all healthy, although initially frightened and very hungry. None were microchipped. The police have received no reports of theft from breeders. The owner has 7 days to claim them before they are transferred to a dog charity to be rehomed. The council is not stating which charity. Rob Carter, managing director of housing firm Millgate Winchester, told the Chronicle, "We were riding back to Winchester yesterday, Wednesday evening, at 8:30 p.m. when we saw a Labrador puppy on the edge of the path. No collar and clearly very scared. We called it to us and checked that it was not injured. We discussed what we should do next, and as we were trying to formulate a plan, 2 more emerged from the shadows. Then some cyclists coming towards us shouted an alarm and 4 more puppies arrived. With 7 puppies at our feet, we had no idea what to do. The group tried calling 101 but got no answer, and Winchester City Council was closed. A vet directed them to Colin Stoneman at Three Oaks Boarding Kennels. Mr. Carter of Northbrook Avenue, St. Giles's Hill, added, "They are beautiful Labrador puppies. Some are fox red, others more golden. A spokesman for Three Oaks Kennels said last Thursday, "They are all absolutely fine and are being bathed at the moment. They had plenty to eat last night as they were so hungry. We haven't been contacted by anybody to claim them. We tried to scan for microchips but can't find them yet. They are adorable." The 8th puppy was discovered on Sunday by Suzanne Denneby, who was walking her dog with husband Sean, son William, and his girlfriend Caitlin Newman near Alsford Golf Course.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Carville, Audrey Carville, on the 9th of October, aged 95. Childs, John Childs, on the 7th of October, aged 82. Daly, Jean Mary Daly, at home, on the 8th of October, aged 95. Hammond, Maureen Margaret Hammond, on the 11th of October, aged 91. Hitchens, Kevin William Hitchens, at home on the 8th of October, aged 70. Mariner, Peter Mariner, at home on the 3rd of October, aged 73. Pearson, Dora Winifred Pearson. There are no dates given for her. Stamper, David John Stamper, at home on the 10th of October. Willett, Peter Kenneth Willett, at home on the 7th of October. Young, Jerry Young, on the 14th of October, aged 91. And now we have Christian Comment.
Christian Comment, the pressing need to be kinder. Following the tragic event last Friday of the killing of the MP for Southend West, Sir Davis Amos, I felt that as this column was called Christian Comment, I could hardly not say anything on the subject. Sir David was himself a Christian, a devout Roman Catholic, and his beliefs very much governed his life, both as an individual and as a member of Parliament. Many people have commented on his kindness and how he tried to be of service to all his constituents, regardless of their creed or colour. What can we say about such an event? What should be the Christian response? I could give a classic response on forgiveness, but I think this is more complex than that alone. We are told that many of our MPs, and indeed local councillors and those who support them, are regularly abused and threatened online as well as in person. I think this says a lot about what is wrong with our society as a whole and the sort of behaviour, even if we don't condone it, we accept and do nothing about it. This week, the morning service on BBC Radio 4 has various aspects of healing as its theme. This is to reflect St. Luke's Day on October the 18th. As Luke, a physician, is the patron saint of doctors and healers. It's easy to think of healing in terms of physical treatment and cures. Mental health has become more topical of late, and the general public are beginning to understand the importance of one's childhood experience and the effects of difficult relationships in this respect. In fact, they can also play a part in physical health as well. Behaviour, as well as health, can be the result of experience and relationships. Hence, it's often discovered that abusers have themselves been abused in the past. Bullies have often been bullied, and so on. When, some years ago, I first became interested in the Ministry of Healing, I was very taken with the notion and concept of wholeness. When we say hello, we are in fact saying, be whole. This led to exploring the Hebrew word shalom. This can be simply translated as peace, but in fact it means far more. It means not just peace, but harmony, wholeness, completeness, as well as encompassing prosperity and general welfare. In fact, it also refers to our relationship with God, as well as with one another, as well as with the rest of creation. We could, as many have suggested, follow Sir David's example of being kind to one another and the rest of creation. He was an animal lover and involved in legislation about their care. By being kind, we might go some way to repairing our broken world.
Now we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we start off with the first letter,
which is from Barbara White, and she says that she's disappointed. Sir, I was very excited when Winchester's new leisure centre opened. Being disabled, I assumed wrongly the facilities would be adapted for disabled people. On my first visit, I was dismayed to find after parking in the disabled places, there was a long walk into the centre. I use a walking frame, and in the winter, when the weather is at its worst, if it's raining, I will get drenched just getting to the centre, so probably will not go. Cannot the disabled parking be on the same level as the centre? Very badly designed for disabled people. Well, I get into the centre and have to get somebody to open the doors for me, as they're fire doors and too heavy for me to open, as I have a walker. I can't get in the new pool, as it doesn't have sloping steps to walk down, only vertical ladders. I know there are hoists, but I can walk in, so we'll have to use the children's pool when it's available. Also, I was asked some years ago what facilities I thought would help disabled people around the pool, and suggested putting a bar all around the pool. This hasn't been done. I do classes in both Studios 1 and 2, and there are only bars one side of the room. It would help if another wall had them. And finally, whoever designed the disabled toilets did not use them, as the toilet roll holders you can't reach when sitting on the toilet. I have been to Holly Hill, another Everyone Active, and their disabled toilets are the same. The Winchester Sport and Leisure Centre was a golden opportunity for facilities for disabled people to be improved, but it is lacking in so many ways. I am really disappointed. So writes Barbara White, Cranbourne Drive, Otterbourne.
Another letter comes from Paul Hickey and is entitled Lido Reaction. Sir, turning the closed River Park Leisure Centre into an outdoor Lido will be more like an outdoor Lilo or Lilo. This is England, not the French Riviera. England doesn't get many warm summer days. This Lido will be unused for most of the year. Plus, you already have an Amazon-sized new swimming pool at Bar End. Good idea number one. Shock horror. The River Park Leisure Centre should reopen and be what it was before. That is an affordable, centrally located sports centre. River Park's prices were always good value and affordable, unlike the expensive new one down the road. River Park also had lots of actual sports, unlike the one down the road. Good idea number two. Turn the River Park Leisure Centre into a centrally located adult education college or large community centre. It is good for the mind, good for the community, fun and easy to get to. Good idea number three. Turn the River Park Leisure Centre into an indoor tennis club. Because of the English weather, it means that tennis can be played all year round. Also, it is centrally located in Winchester, and therefore easy to get to. Anyone for strawberries and cream? Perfect. Paul Hickey, Parchment Street, Winchester.
And this is a letter from Councillor Martin Todd. Distance to the two centres. Sir, despite the concerns raised in last week's newspaper, Chronicle October 14th, please can I assure your readers that the walking distance from the Barfield Close bus stop to the new Winchester Sports and Leisure Park is considerably less than the distance from the North Walls bus stop to the former River Park Leisure Centre. I walked it several times last Friday, tracking the exact route with the Map My Walk app. The distance to the new Sports and Leisure Centre from the nearest bus stop is around 200 metres, 220 yards, or around a 2.5 minute walk. The distance to the River Park from the nearest bus stop is around 310 metres, 340 yards, and takes just over a minute longer. There are two sets of bus stops in Barfield Close, and the signage hasn't been clear enough in the past. It's possible that your reader got off at the wrong one. I have asked Stagecoach to change the message on the Park and Ride bus to announce the Leisure Centre stop, and they have promised to do so. No promises were made, that I can find, about having the bus run to the Leisure Centre. The previous decision was not to divert buses into the Leisure Centre because it would lengthen journey times and mean less frequent buses as a result. When we see the results of the four-week free bus trial between the Broadway and the Leisure Centre, we can review whether this needs to be revisited. And this is from Councillor Martin Todd, Lloyd Lindsay Square, Week, Winchester.
This letter from James Anderson asks a question. Ruinous fantasy? Sir, one wonders how Bob Whitmarsh achieved such extraordinarily low domestic electricity use, Chronicle Letter, 7th of October. A lamp off here and cup of tea less there aren't going to account for it. Or is his electricity profile a consequence of spending much of his time away from home? Despite the hoo-ha over renewables and the eye-watering bills, over half of our present electricity supply is still from gas and nuclear. Under Boris Johnson's plans, domestic supply must increase fourfold, meaning an eightfold increase in renewables and a solution to the intermittency problem. From my prior letter, just 15% of this is for room heating, and no amount of home insulation is going to change things much. The PM claims that renewables will make us self-sufficient. No one has a workable plan or a credible technology to achieve it. In short, it's a ruinous fantasy. By declaring target dates, the immediate effect has been to turn off investment in oil and gas. Energy shortages are now baked into our British economy as a growing problem over the next 20 years. Strategically, the UK has put itself at the mercy of Russia and the EU, itself now dependent on Russian gas. That is not a future that I want to leave for future generations. And that's from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Michael Campbell, MBE, writes a letter entitled Police Secrecy. Sir, I read with interest Khalid Aziz's Spare a Copper, Chronicle October the 14th. He has the courage in this wokery world to question the probity of one of our sacred cows, the police, who are deemed too precious to criticise. He draws attention to the increasingly held view that institutional corruptness is endemic in some parts of the police, and that such a view can only act to destroy the vital relationship and trust that must exist between the police and those they serve. A new police and crime commissioner was elected in May. Donna Jones, the Conservative candidate, she seems to be getting well stuck into her job and has introduced some good initiatives already. One of these was to have a virtual public scrutiny session in September, where she and the Chief Constable answered questions from the public. I put a question which was neither acknowledged nor introduced to the session. It drew attention to the fact that more than a dozen members of the Hampshire force have been dismissed since 2018, including two inspectors and three sergeants. It asked why, when investigation of misdemeanours by police men and women is conducted by the police themselves, more than a third of recent cases leading to dismissal have been held in private, despite government advice that stresses the importance of transparency in such matters. How can such secrecy help to heal the lack of respect and trust that is building up between the public and the police? I recall my time on the police authority in the mid-80s, when a very close relationship existed between the chief constable and the chairman of the authority. It seems such a relationship still exists. It is, of course, important to have a good working relationship, but it is the job of the police and crime commissioner to hold the chief constable's feet to the fire, to ensure all aspects of her job are done to the highest standard. I think the two are compatible, but the relationship needs very careful management, and I hope Mrs. Jones can achieve it. Michael Campbell, MBE, Shaldon, Alton.
And this is a letter from Simon Lever, entitled St. Luke's Future. Sir, a church is the centre of a community, providing a meeting of like-minded people to gather together for prayer and friendliness in a united belief. Churches are an ideal for social gatherings and events where individuals can engage and enjoy harmony, friendship and kindness. As for St. Luke's Church structural issues, Winchester Cathedral is 1,000 years old, but often 1960s and especially 1970s structures have a very short lifespan. What is required for the good of the community is a new church of a size that reflects the number of worshippers. It should also be of a more gentle design, Chronicle, October the 14th. A community centre, perhaps close to a new church, would be ideal. Although Badger Farm has an excellent, successful community centre, the nearest church is in Oliver's Battery, which also provides community activities. Replacing St. Luke's Church with affordable housing is an admirable plan, but there must be assurance that a church be built as soon as feasible and a design which reflects a place of worship. And this is from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
This letter, entitled Noisy Bikes, is from Hugh Lumby, Meon Valley Division, Hampshire County Council, Upper Meon Valley Ward, Winchester City Council. Sir, as summer draws to a close, residents of the Meon Valley were once again reminded this weekend of the noise pollution caused by motorbikes with modified exhaust pipes and inconsiderate riding styles. I am sorry to have to bring this issue to the attention of your readers again, but it has been allowed to continue for too long. A comprehensive and holistic approach is needed, which discourages the small minority of motorcyclists who behave in this way from coming to our area. We have heard some good proposals, including from the PCC, to look into additional speed enforcement vehicles, but we now need action. As we enter the traditionally quieter winter season, I call on all stakeholders to work together to deliver that approach in a joined-up, cohesive way. In particular, I would like to see our MPs continue to press for legislative change, the police committing the resources necessary to deter the anti-social minority, and Hampshire County Council committing to sufficient measures to improve road safety. Most of all, I call on Winchester City Council and East Hants District Council to take the lead in introducing noise monitoring acoustic cameras onto our road network. That's from Hugh Lumby, Meon Valley Division, Hampshire County Council, Upper Meon Valley Ward, Winchester City Council, High Street, Meonstoke.
Nick Ray writes under the title A Chance Missed. Sir, Winchester Member of Parliament Steve Brine is ever keen to take centre stage and vicarious credit when NHS photo opportunities present, as evidenced by the Royal Hampshire County Hospital ward photograph on the cover of the Chronicle last week, irrespective of his true role in such. But what when it comes to taking responsibility too? As Parliamentary Under-Secretary of State for Public Health 2017 to 2019, duties of which included prevention and intervention, major diseases, primary care and health protection and improvement, Steve had very real NHS and public health responsibilities, yet ones which he shirked. These included failures to plan and repair which, in part, were responsible for unnecessary deaths and suffering during the continuing COVID pandemic. A pandemic which has just been described by his own colleagues and peers, Coronavirus Lessons Learned to Date report, as one of the worst public health failures in United Kingdom history. This by an all-MP group overseen by two former Conservative ministers. During Steve's health tenure, he would certainly have been aware of Exercise Cygnus, a 2016 government's simulation of a pandemic outbreak. A report which shows great gaps in UK's pandemic readiness, as well as highlighting the need to stockpile PPE 4 years before the pandemic struck. So why didn't Mr. Brine address these issues, described in Cygnus as major deficiencies in the machinery of government, during his tenure? Was he too busy on photo shoots on his private lobby group work? See Chronicle October 31st, 2019, which show Steve derives additional lucrative income from private firms sourcing locum NHS staff due to NHS underfunding. Even though this eats into the time, up to 40 hours a month, that Steve is paid to work for us. In his defence, perhaps Mr. Brine is doing little more emulating what his currently absent leader Boris Johnson does in avoiding taking responsibility for COVID outcomes and death rates. Death rates far worse than many other countries and outcomes that he could have ameliorated. But doesn't Winchester and the UK deserve better than Brine? Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this letter from Professor Roger Richardson is entitled Express Departure. Sir, I completely endorse the objections raised in earlier letters to National Express's decision to convert its temporary suspension of services to and from Winchester into a permanent cessation, despite the promise given on its own website that such services will be reinstated. Ending the Heathrow and London Victoria services self-evidently, unfairly penalises Winchester residents and denies them, certainly as far as the Heathrow service is concerned, by far the most convenient way of getting to the airport. Strong pressure from both the city and county councils should certainly be brought to bear to cause a change of mind. It would be possible, of course, with prior agreement, for National Express coaches to stop either in the bus station, a practice followed in Andover, or in front of the railway station. Surely either of these easy options is perfectly feasible. And this is from Professor Roger Richardson, Partridge Down, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
Another letter about National Express from Robert Witheridge, who lives in Surrey. Sir, I am a regular visitor to your lovely town of Winchester. Please can I say that I am more than a little bit miffed that National Express has stopped coming from Heathrow to here. As other readers have put, Surely there must be somewhere else they can stop, like the bus station or Jury Street, for instance. As I work only about 20 minutes from Heathrow, it was so convenient for me. That's from Robert Witteridge, Virginia Park, Virginia Water, Surrey.
More locally, Mike Owens writes from Hyde Street in Winchester. Sir, it's nice to see things are back to normal with all the roads open 24 hours, 7 days a week, to partially reduce the congestion that occurs for 2 hours on working days. And how we have missed the car skills, which bring you overtaking and undertaking on pavements and using the 20 mile per hour recommended speed signs as minimum speed, not a maximum after dark. As for white van man's arrogant behaviour, reminding us pavements are there for them to park on, not for pedestrians to use, how did we live without you? Also, for those who need to know, there is no shortage of indicators for cars, so the third of drivers who need their cars repaired, there should be no waiting time. Mike Owens, Hyde Street, Winchester. Amen.
That concludes the letters, and we now move on to Chronicle comment, which will be followed by letter from Westminster and then first person.
This is the editorial comment, what to do about our MP's security. First, it was Joe Cox, then on Friday, Sir Davis Amos, stabbed to death by a man with a knife. The second killing of an MP in 5 years. No less shocking and sickening, and something that asks very searching questions about our society and many of the people within it. Local MP Steve Brine has spoken about the loss of someone he considered a friend. Understandably, he has been less keen to discuss his own and his staff's security arrangements. We cannot simply shrug our shoulders and say, well, this is the 21st century. It is quite simply intolerable. A suggestion has been made that police officers should be present at MPs' surgeries, but dismissed by many. Why? MPs are a crucial part of our democracy, a link between Parliament and the people. An hour or two once a week is hardly going to snap the thin blue line, but give protection at a time and place when an assailant knows the MP will be vulnerable. It will send a powerful message that such killings are an attack not just on one man or woman, but on our democracy and so on all of us.
Letter from Westminster this week is written, of course, by Winchester MP Steve Brine. Thank you to the large number of constituents who got in touch or spoke with me whilst I was out and about last weekend, simply to wish me well and send their condolences after the senseless death of my friend Sir David Amos. People always say nice things at a time like this, but I can assure you every single thing you've heard is true. David was a gentleman, a great friend to younger MPs, and he understood constituency comes first. He told me early on in my time, it's the day job, and he was right. The horror of last Friday, I had just come out of our hospital after opening the new pharmacy building and was frozen to the spot when I heard, has, if anything, intensified since. I think MPs are both shocked and not in the slightest bit surprised, if that makes any sense. It's happened before, and we fear it will happen again. For obvious reasons, I won't go into the detail, but the fact is my team and I have operated within a much heightened security regime for many years now, before the murder of dear Joe Cox even. It's not fair to say there's only been a focus on MPs' security in recent days. Operation Bridger, established after Joe's death, has to some extent supported us, and that's been widely talked about. But as I said on the TV last weekend, there is an element of risk in what we do, and we cannot eliminate that completely. The message I get loud and clear from constituents is that you value the direct engagement we have in Winchester and Chandler's Ford, whether that be a quick word in the supermarket, visits I do, events I attend, or the regular street surgeries I hold, including summer tour recently concluded for this year. Whilst tributes in the House of Commons on Monday were lovely, attention is rightly turning to how we preserve all of that whilst being responsible to ourselves, our staff, and above all, our families who make doing this job possible. As one of the now more experienced members of the House, I am engaging with our Home Secretary and the Speaker, as well as Hampshire Police, to examine how we do that. Everyone has been so nice in recent days, and we can only hope this new spirit of kindness and civility is here to stay, even when people don't get the answer they want. Much has been said about social media, and I can promise constituents I will be looking closely at upcoming online harms legislation through my role on the Digital, Culture, Media and Sport Select Committee. Platforms such as Facebook and Twitter are, in my opinion, the publishers of our age, and we should look at anonymity online and encryption where it frustrates law enforcement. But let's not shoot the messenger to the exclusion of looking at ourselves. Something about our political discourse has become really nasty in part, so let's dial it down and look up as well as down. How we communicate with each other in the real world translates online and vice versa. So from here on, every time we engage politically, online, in an email and even whilst cycling, we should ask ourselves whether we're part of the solution or part of the problem.
First person this week is by George Hayter. It's been titled Dressed Up for High Gas Prices. I love my cheap ski suit, but not for the right reasons. It was years ago that I bought the outfit from a large branch of a well-known supermarket. I was attracted by the low price, even blinded by the low price. Because it was such a bargain, I suppressed my suspicions about the unusual fabric. For ski attire, the material was unusually shiny. It wasn't like a fabric, it felt more like plastic. Off I went to Switzerland for a two-week winter sports holiday high in the Alps. I was pretty sure that no one could see that my ski suit was a fraction the price of what everyone else was wearing. The chest-high trousers, known as salopettes, were dark blue, and I was confident they looked as good as any worn by millionaire skiers. The jacket was magic too. It was an eye-catching combination of light and dark blues, and I was sure I looked like a film star as I flashed down the slopes at what felt like 70 miles per hour, but was in fact probably more like 25. It turned out that the bargain ski suit had a fundamental flaw. It came to light when I took my first fall. Normally lying snow will slow a fallen skier to a halt after a few feet, but I kept sliding. Even when I spread my arms and legs to make myself a big X, I carried on going. At first I didn't understand, but after a few falls and helplessly sliding tens of feet each time, I realised it was my super smooth suit. It was making me like a wet bar of soap sliding down a bath. Eventually, I learned to enjoy the helpless slipping. It was a way of showing off. Tumbling over and over and then sliding a long way made it look as though I'd been going very fast. It gave the impression I was a downhill champion. So violent did my spectacular falls appear that I think bystanders assumed I'd needed ambulance. Years of use eventually led to the salopettes getting torn. I had to buy a new suit, but I kept the old one in the back of the wardrobe. Then one cold winter, I was reflecting on my heating bill when I had the crazy idea of wearing the torn salopettes while I was working at home. Even on the coldest days, I was able to type comfortably without any heating because ski suits are so well insulated. Wearing one is like wearing a duvet. I find ski suits more comfortable than the many layers of jumpers, hats and scarves you would have to put on to achieve the same warming effect. Less constricting, less itchy, and quicker getting dressed. Funnily enough, I always changed into ordinary trousers before going out. I put up with outside cold because I am afraid of looking silly in a ski suit in Hampshire. This coming winter, I plan to return to wearing salopettes at least at home some days because the gas crisis is putting prices up and because climate change means we should all consume less energy. Most people accept that insulating your home is important. So is insulating yourself. My agreeable experience of wearing a ski suit makes you wonder if there isn't an opportunity for the fashion industry to help people keep warm. Clothes manufacturers should adapt the design of ski gear to make it look okay for everyday wear. It could be a particular help to vulnerable, poor pensioners. Retailers and fashion magazines could rally to the cause by championing leisure wear, casual wear, and business wear for frosty temperatures. Until outfits as warm as a duvet become part of mainstream menswear and women's wear, buying a ski suit seems the best option for staying cosy in a cold home. You might even find one second-hand in a charity shop. Well said, George.
There are no special announcements this week. Sunrise at the moment is at about 20 to 8 in the morning and sunset at 6 o'clock in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now move on to items of general news interest. Paul has had to leave us, unfortunately, so I will be reading some of the extracts. So we'll start with the first one now.
Hundreds attend funeral of Major General at Cathedral. More than 700 mourners, including the Defence Secretary and senior military officers, attended the funeral of the former head of the Royal Marines. Major General Matthew Holmes, who was a pallbearer at the Duke of Edinburgh's funeral, was found dead at his home in Winchester on October the 2nd. An inquest heard he was found hanged after he'd been having concerns about his career and his marriage. Major General Holmes, 54, who had served in Northern Ireland, Kosovo, Iraq, and Afghanistan, was Commandant General, Royal Marines, from 2019 until April this year. Among those at the funeral at Winchester Cathedral on Wednesday last week were his widow, Leah, a solicitor, and his children, William, 11, and Eleanor, 15. Also present were Defence Secretary Ben Wallace, the outgoing Chief of the Defence Staff, General Sir Nick Carter, and his replacement, Admiral Sir Tony Radakin. A line of Marines paraded on the approach to the cathedral while the coffin arrived by hearse. The coffin, draped in the Union flag, with Major General Holmes's cap and wreath of white roses on top, was carried into the cathedral by the same pallbearers who joined Major General Holmes at the Duke of Edinburgh's funeral. All elements of the Royal Marines attended the funeral, which was led by the Dean of Winchester Cathedral, Catherine Ogle, including 42 commandos to which Major General Holmes belonged, with music provided by the Royal Marines Band Service. A crowd of mourners gathered in the grounds alongside standard bearers from the Royal Marines Association and the US Marine Corps. Following his death, Major General Holmes's widow released a statement paying tribute to him. She said, "My husband Matt was a kind, generous man. He was courageous and had committed his life to serving in the Royal Marines. He was selfless to such an extent that this was more important than his own career progression. A full inquest into his death will be held on February the 10th, 2022.
Firearms seized by police before death. A licensed firearm was seized by police from the home of the former head of the Royal Marines just days before his death. Major General Matthew Holmes, who was one of the pallbearers at the Duke of Edinburgh's funeral, was found dead at his home in Winchester on October the 2nd. An inquest heard that the 54-year-old was found hanging after he'd been having concerns about his career and his marriage. Major General Holmes, who served in Northern Ireland, Kosovo, Iraq and Afghanistan, was Commandant General Royal Marines from 2019 until April this year. Hampshire Police have confirmed that an armed unit attended the family home on Kingsgate Road on September the 22nd. A force spokeswoman said, "We attended at about 1:30 p.m. on the 22nd of September, following a concern for welfare call. A licensed firearm was seized. No threats were made to any other person in relation to the incident, and no arrests were made. Armed police did attend, but not in an armed capacity." More than 700 mourners, including Defence Secretary Ben Wallace and senior military leaders, attended Major General Holmes's funeral at Winchester Cathedral on Wednesday. Following his death, his widow released a statement paying tribute. She said, "My husband Matt was a kind, generous man. He was courageous and had committed his life to serving in the Royal Marines. He was selfless to such an extent that this was more important than his own career progression." Ahead of the funeral, the new head of the Royal Marines, Lieutenant General Rob McGowan, Commandant General Royal Marines, CGRM, wrote in a letter to senior commanders that the death of Major General Holmes was being used, quote, "to drive a wedge," unquote, between the Navy and the Marines. He wrote that Major General Holmes had been in a bad place following the loss of his dream job. Referring to the colours of the shirts worn by the Navy and the Marines, Lieutenant General McGowan said, "The dispute is serving to drive a wedge between white shirts and Lovett, which helps nobody."
Date announced for Christmas lights switch on. The date of the annual Winchester Christmas lights switch on has been announced, and now a search has begun to find local heroes to help turn on the festive lights. The event will take place on Thursday, November the 18th at the Broadway outside Winchester Guildhall from 4 p.m. and will be hosted by Heart Radio's Toby Anstis. The night will be full of festive fun with Santa's sleigh and live performances from Hairstock Primary School Choir, the Pilgrims School Chamber Choir, Winchester A Cappella, Integra 8 Dance, Theatre Royal Winchester, Spitfire Sisters, Rock Choir, Duo Guitar and Diva Academy to help kick-start the festive season celebrations. As part of the community-focused events, Winchester Business Improvement District is launching their Search for Local Heroes campaign again this year to find Winchester stars to help switch on the festive lights. On the night, the countdown will begin just before 6 p.m. when the local heroes will help press the giant switch-on button that will light up the city. Returning this year, in addition to the main stage, Santa's sleigh and the big screen in the Broadway, the giant inflatable snow globe will be installed in the square. The snow globe is part of a fundraising initiative for Spare Change for Lasting Change, and 100% of the donations will go directly to two local charities working together to support people experiencing homelessness in Winchester. The charities are the Winchester Beacon, formerly Winchester Church's Night Shelter, and Trinity Winchester. Other activities to look out for this festive season, organised by the Winchester Business Improvement District, will include Gingerbread Christmas Trail, as well as the Winchester Independence Chalet at the Christmas Cathedral Christmas Market. Sarah Davis, Winchester BID manager, said, "We are delighted to be coordinating the Switch On festivities again this year. A big thank you to the event sponsor, Dutton Gregory. This will be a fun-filled community event that brings together the entire city of Winchester. It is also the perfect opportunity to shine the spotlight on local community heroes, which is why we will be searching for well-deserving local people to help switch on this year's Christmas lights."
Buskers invited to perform at Christmas. Winchester Cathedral is inviting local buskers to perform at this year's Christmas market. It follows the recent incidents of two Winchester buskers being ordered to move by cathedral staff. Both were resolved by the cathedral. A spokesperson from the cathedral said, "Following on from recent conversations, it has highlighted the variety of local talent within the city. The cathedral would like to invite Winchester City Centre buskers to come and busk in selected slots at this year's Christmas market to entertain festive visitors. The cathedral has also invited local choirs and performers singing or playing a variety of musical styles with members of any age to come and entertain festive visitors at this year's market. The Christmas market runs from November the 19th to December the 22nd, with performance slots available during the weekends. Both buskers involved previously have said they will take the cathedral up on this offer and perform at the market. Marvin Naylor was involved with the first incident, where a clergyman told him to move from his usual busking spot on the square. Marvin said, "I made a complaint about a certain member of the clergy who was very rude and intimidating to me in the square a couple of months ago, and there was quite a bit of publicity around it, resulting in a meeting I had with the dean, and one of the things she mentioned was getting me to play at the Christmas market. Anyway, I said I'd be interested." Rick Tarrant, who was told to move from his spot on the square by a security guard more recently, said, "Yes, I've declared my interest in busking on the cathedral site over the Christmas period. I was recently contacted by the cathedral regarding busking during the Christmas market. It's a nice gesture and also enables the cathedral to have some control of busking within their grounds. The cathedral are encouraging any buskers who are interested in a performing slot to get in touch with them."
10K returns after COVID-19 break. The Winchester 10K is returning at the end of October after being moved forward from its usual date in the spring due to the pandemic. The event will be taking place on October the 31st and will start at Winchester Guildhall in the Broadway and end at the River Park Leisure Centre. There will be some road closures during the event, from the race start time at 8:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. There will be diversions in place. The roads that are on the event route will reopen as soon as the race passes through. This year, The event features a revised start with the race leaving the Broadway via King Alfred's statue. With the event falling on Halloween, the organisers are encouraging people to dress up for their fancy dress competition, with the winner receiving a prize. The date for the 2022 event has already been set for February the 20th, with entries opening soon.
Council's progress on climate change laid out. Hampshire County Council's work towards tackling climate change has been reported to Cabinet members. This first Climate Change Annual Progress Report 2020 to 2021 sets out the significant progress that is being made since the launch of the authority's climate change strategy. Such work includes reducing carbon emissions and ensuring that Hampshire is prepared for the impacts of climate change. The work is focused on key areas like reducing emissions from transport, making homes more energy efficient, generating local renewable energy, and protecting and enhancing our natural environment. The report also highlights how the County Council is working with partners to support residents and communities to take action and to make their contribution to tackling climate change. Council leader, Councillor Keith Manns, said, "This is an excellent record of the depth and breadth of our commitment to meeting the targets we have set, to be carbon neutral by 2050 and to be prepared for a 2 degrees rise in temperature. I'm delighted to see that tremendous progress is being made, particularly in embedding climate change into the DNA of almost everything that we do. However, I fully understand that there is still a long way to go. That said, this is a great start to that journey." Executive Member for Climate Change and Sustainability, Councillor Jan Warwick, said, "This is a particularly timely report in view of the forthcoming COP26 conference in Glasgow, and really reflects the authority's determination to play its part in this crucial issue. It is really pleasing to see so many community initiatives starting to deliver outcomes. We also know that to be successful in meeting the challenge of tackling climate change, our partners, residents and businesses must join us to take action and create real lasting changes. As a local authority, we simply cannot reach our targets alone." The council has said that the progress report makes it clear that Hampshire's residents and communities have a vital role in reducing emissions and preparing for the impacts of climate change in their own homes and through lifestyle choices. Therefore, multiple projects have been set up to support communities to be active at a local level.
City flood defences complete. Work has finished on the major new flood defence for Winchester at Derngate. It now protects Winchester city centre with an uninterrupted 950-metre defence system from Whale Street to Gordon Road. The off-site environmental work will also have a positive impact on biodiversity at Closentum Fen in St Cross and the Nun Stream at Abbots Barton and Hyde, plus providing flood refuges for otters and voles on Winnell Moors. The works were prompted by flooding in 2014, which came close to swamping much of the city centre. The scheme was jointly funded by the City Council, with £800,000 coming from Community Infrastructure Levy from developers, and the Environmental Agency, who provided £548,000. Councillor Linda Murphy, City Council Cabinet Member for Climate Emergency, said, "The completion of the Derngate flood defence system comes as a welcome relief to the city's homes, businesses and historic buildings. These works provide defences for the heart of our city, adding to the already completed works that help defend residents in Water Lane, St Bede School and the North Walls area. David Martin, Environment Agency flood risk manager, said, "The Environment Agency has invested over £1.3 million to reduce the risk of flooding in Winchester since 2014, and we are extremely proud to have worked alongside the city and the county councils to ensure the successful delivery of this project."
MP walks and talks with parents during Stroll of City. Winchester's MP spent time with a parent support group recently on a walk around the city. Steve Brine, Winchester and Chandlers Ford MP, walked around the city with Winchester and District NCT volunteers answering questions along the way. Starting at Winchester Cathedral and exploring a route along the River Itchen, they discussed local issues including maternity care and children's services. Winchester and District NCT has been hosting free weekly walk and talk events since the winter lockdown of 2020 in order to provide expecting and new parents with support, companionship and guidance during their parenting journey. Steve Brine, MP, said, "I felt privileged to join the walk and talk and to meet the mums who came along. This may have started out as a COVID survival idea, but long may it continue, and huge credit to the Winchester NCT volunteers for getting everyone together. These weekly groups have been invaluable to parents across the city during the pandemic."
Refugee support. Hampshire's unique solution to homelessness, Emmaus, is to offer a home, work experience and training for an Afghan refugee at its community in Winchester. The community in Bar End of around 40 formerly homeless people is providing an open-ended grant under its solidarity programme for someone fleeing Afghanistan and who has arrived unaccompanied and with no contacts in the UK. The refugee will be provided with their own room in the recently built Lupton Rooms and gain work experience within the social enterprise which pays for the ongoing running of the community. They will integrate with their fellow companions and be provided with extensive lifestyle support along with a development plan so they can live independently. Nigel Samuels, Chief Executive of Emmaus Hampshire, said, "Our ethos has always been for companions to give back to society acts of solidarity, recognising how their own lives have been turned around for the better. They appreciate that many people, like those arriving from Afghanistan, face life in a far worse state than their own." Prior to the pandemic, Emmaus Hampshire companions provided over £20,000 a year in free labour and furniture to support those in need locally and through charity events. The charity is appealing directly to local organisations who may know of an individual in urgent need and ask them to contact them at Emmaus Hampshire.
Pressing ahead with homes on green space. Winchester Civic Chiefs are pressing ahead with plans to build council houses on a Winchester open space. Councillor Kelsey Lerney, Cabinet Member for Housing, has ordered a business case for 8 houses on the open space on Dyson Drive in Abbots Barton. She told a meeting that the public reaction had been broadly supportive. The council envisages 6 3-bedroomed homes and 2 2-bed ones available for people on the housing waiting list. The 2-bed homes would be shared ownership. The council currently has 347 applicants wanting 2- and 3-bedroomed homes. The houses would be built to passive house standard, which is highly energy efficient. 6 potential sites in Abbots Barton were first identified as far back as 2012. Councillor Lerney's decision day meeting heard. A site in Hillierway was eventually developed with 13 homes, completed at the end of 2017. Local architects T2 have been appointed to draw up plans for Dyson Drive. Abbots Barton residents were consulted about building on Dyson Drive in July 2019, and 200 people attended an event on the site. Deborah Sunley, council project manager, told the meeting, "Some residents were concerned about the loss of amenity space. It is not well used because there's a large space not far away. There were concerns about the appearance of the buildings, with many favouring traditional designs." There had been opposition to development in Abbots Barton a few years ago, but an application to have the space designated a village green has been dropped, the meeting was told. Councillor Lerney said, "We will make clear which areas of green space we are keeping and how much green space there is. Abbots Barton has more green space than where I live in Hairstock, a suburb which dates from the same era. We can be proud of the amount of open space we have there. Abbots Barton has a large open space off Chandler Road. The meeting heard that houses would be more suitable for the low-rise Abbots Barton area. The council has been developing flats at the Valley in Stanmore and has plans for more in Winnell, as the flats on Winnell Manor Road."
Decision day on multi-storey plan. City councillors are to decide a controversial proposal for a new multi-storey car park at Bar End. The structure is currently being built by the City Council on the Voltex site off Barfield Close, using a previous planning permission, but its planning committee is now considering an amended plan following public opposition. The application was due to have been heard last month, but was deferred because of a flurry of late representations. The planning committee meets Thursday, October the 21st. Campaigners urged people to comment on the council website by Monday. They have launched a legal challenge which is due to be heard in the High Court in London on November the 25th. The local residents on Domum Road are unhappy that the council is pressing on with construction, with the matter still to be heard in the High Court. Their objections include the overbearing scale and the impact of noise and light pollution and antisocial behaviour. They say it would be overdevelopment, larger than Coventry House that previously stood on the site. The structure would be visible from the Water Meadows and St Catherine's Hill, and also overshadow many areas of Domum Road.
Lido petition gathers more online support. Nearly 2,500 people have signed a petition calling for the Lido, for a Lido in Winchester on the site of the River Park Leisure Centre. A petition urging Winchester City Council to support the creation of the outdoor swimming pool garnered around 500 signatures in the last 7 days. The petition is due to be presented at the next council meeting on November the 3rd, but that has been postponed and the petition will be open until November the 30th. It has been launched by the newly formed Winchester Lido Group in response to repeated calls over the years for an outdoor swimming venue. The County City Council has this year opened a £40 million sport and leisure centre at Bar End with a 50-metre pool, but the Lido campaigners say that outdoor swimming offers additional benefits, including the positive impact on mental health. Lidos are increasingly popular nationwide, with pools at Lymington, Hillsea and Aldershot. The council is expected to publish its plans for the River Park Leisure Centre and North Walls Park this autumn.
Villagers launch initiative to plant 100 trees. 80 residents gathered to contribute to the parish council's goal to plant 100 trees at the recreation ground in Martyrworthy. On Saturday morning, 35 trees were planted with the holes prepared by diggers before 17 local families completed the job of planting and watering the trees. Each tree was adopted by a family, and a wooden tag with the names of the children on it was attached to each tree. The children are being encouraged to visit their adopted tree regularly to check on its progress. Itchen Valley Parish Councillor Steve Percy from Easton said, "The morning was a great success, with the community enthusiastically coming together to recognise the climate crisis, but also have a lot of fun in the process. The involvement of our valley children was a heartwarming and optimistic sight."
Vehicle hits gym for third time. A motor vehicle crashed into a Winchester gym last week for the third time in 5 years. New Energy Fitness Gym in Middlebrook Street first had a Ford Fiesta plough through the glass in 2016 as a female driver put her foot down on the accelerator, mistaking it for the brake pedal. Last Monday, a third vehicle went into the window, where two more bollards had been requested from the City Council to prevent such incidents. All three crashes have involved vehicles leaving the public car park next to the gym. The gym owner, Helen Mosley, had been in contact with City Council to place more bollards in front of the building. Three bollards were put in place, but an additional two have not been fitted. Ms. Mosley said, "The council doesn't see there is a problem because they've made no changes. The impact is high for us because we live in a daily situation where we have no control of a hazard. To come back to us now on the same email regarding the fourth and fifth bollard shows there is no urgency or says it's important or has a safety issue attached to it. We're very lucky that people haven't been injured." Ms. Mosley said no bollards were put in place until after the second incident, where five bollard markings were put in place, but only three were put up. A police report stated that if the fourth and fifth bollards had been put in place, a further incident would not have impacted the building. The City Council was asked to comment.
Police probe school arson. The police are investigating a fire deliberately started at a Winchester secondary school. A teacher is understood to have put out the flames from a fire ignited from paper and books in toilets last Thursday afternoon at the Westgate School in Fulflood. A fire service spokesman said one Winchester fire engine was called to a school on Cheriton Road after a small fire was reported in the toilets involving paper and books. The fire, which was started deliberately, was extinguished using fire extinguishers before we arrived, with crews using ventilation fans to clear the smoke. The incident was handed over to on-site staff, who were advised by firefighters to speak with the police. The school was asked for comment but has not responded. A police spokesman said the fire was in a bin in the grounds. She said, "We were called to reports of a fire at the Westgate School, Cheriton Road. A fire had been set in a bin within the school grounds. This has been clarified to have been in toilets. Officers are investigating. Anyone with information can call 101. The Westgate is Hampshire's first all-through school, which takes pupils from age 4 to 16 years.
Top hairdresser crowned. A 45-year-old Winchester salon has been voted as the winner of the Hampshire Chronicle and Romsey Advertiser Hairdresser of the Year. Guy Cremer Salon in Stonemason's Yard, Parchment Street, was voted by readers and clients as the best of the best. Speaking after receiving the award, Guy said, I've been in Winchester for 45 years. To still be at the top after all these years and to be recognised by the clients on that account is amazing, wonderful. It's a good feeling. With the support of my fabulous team, we have created a very special salon. We have clients that travel from a long way away. I have a client who comes down from Scotland every 2 months, and others from Cornwall and London. We have created a wide reputation. When asked what makes the salon stand out, Guy said, "We have an international staff, and therefore we bring a little bit of different parts of the world. The salon is also involved in shoots for magazines, which allows them to keep up on the latest fashion, along with teaching for L'Oreal in London. The salon employs 15 people, including colour technicians and apprentices."
Footpath Charity opposes bridge plan. The proposed infilling of a bridge in a village near Winchester is being contested by a charity who want to keep access along the old railway line. As previously reported, National Highways, formerly Highways England, proposed to infill the bridge on Stoke Road for safety reasons. The work is currently on hold. The Watercress Way is a walking and cycling route linking Alsford, Kingsworthy, South Wanston and Sutton Scotney. The charity wants to keep the bridge open to allow it in future to extend its path along the old railway line which closed in the 1970s. Jackie Porter, chairman of the Watercress Way charity, said, "The route of the old railway line is protected in the local plans of all the authorities against development, or indeed anything which could jeopardise the route being opened for cycling and walking in the future. We want to stop this happening. Foamed concrete is terrible ecologically and would create a permanent barrier for the development of the route. With sections of the old railway line already open, this is a terrible blow and one we're determined to fight." National Highways have said, should the work go ahead, that the infill would be reversible. Chris Brunskill, Watercress Way trustee, said, "As a parent of young daughters, I'm working for better non-motorised access along this route because I want both my children and others to have better access to wider off-road cycling and walking in the future." The Watercress Way says it is keen to work with National Highways in order to keep the bridge safe. National Highways Head of Historical Railways Estate Programme, Hélène Rossiter, said, "The Historical Railways Estate, HRE, is an important part of our industrial heritage. Any infill plans at Stoke Bridge are part of a national pause on infilling and demolition activity across the HRE. This has been put in place to give local authorities and interest groups more time to fully consider structures as part of their local active travel plans for walking, cycling and heritage railways. When infilling was considered for Stoke Bridge, we were not aware of the Watercress Way plans, and in liaising with Winchester CC and SDNPA, these were never mentioned to us, nor was there any evidence given that the bridge formed any element of their local plans. We would be delighted to work with the group to understand their plans and see how we can coordinate to support such endeavours and seek to transfer the structure for its ongoing care as part of active travel routes."
Winchester Junior Park Run celebrates milestone. Organisers at Winchester Junior Park Run celebrated staging their 200th event in style with fancy dress, balloons and support from the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Vivian Ackwell. The free weekly timed 2 kilometre event takes place at North Walls Recreation Ground every Sunday at 9 a.m. and is for children aged 4 to 14 years. It has followed the success of the adult version held on Saturdays. Run director Rob Porter welcomed the mayor and thanked the volunteers who make the event possible before leading the children in a fun warm-up. The event was started by a fanfare from the mayor, who had brought her trumpet with her for the occasion. As a run, not a race, children are encouraged to run, walk, jump or skip their way around the course, hopefully with a smile on their faces. One of the volunteers always acts as a tail walker, complete with a clip-on crocodile tail, meaning it's impossible to come last. However, in other contexts, we have come to the last item on our extracts this week. So our thanks to our editors, Sue Frain, Anne Brew, Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Paul Newman, who, as I say, had to leave a little bit earlier. And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.